Welcome back to Redefining AI, the show that uncovers the nuances of artificial intelligence, exploring its impact and evolution across industries. I'm your host, Lauren Hocker-Zaffer, and today I am deep diving into the ethical integration of AI within life sciences and biotechnology sectors. Now, to do this, I've been joined by Dave Latshaw. Dave, he has received recognition from prestigious entities such as the World Economic Forum and McKinsey for his pivotal work at Johnson & Johnson, leading the deployment of more than 20 impactful programs impacting $16 billion in yearly sales, also reducing costs by 20% and including and enhancing a 50% increase in reliability. So welcome, Dave. Welcome to Redefining AI.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Maybe we can start the conversation by you telling us a little bit about yourself in your own words.
Happy to. Yeah, so I think by way of background, you know, at heart, I'm a scientist and an engineer. That's how I began. And I think that sort of woven into my DNA at this point, regardless of whether I'm focusing on, you know, business or the artificial intelligence side of things. So originally studied biochemical engineering and then did my PhD research in computational biophysics and molecular biology. More specifically was studying neurodegenerative diseases. So this was, you know, early on in looking at the amyloid cascade hypothesis for Alzheimer's and understanding Parkinson's and the major drivers for those individual diseases. And that's what really got me into trying to understand how we could use small molecules in order to impact the kinetics of those particular, the progression of those diseases. So that work oriented me very well to get into the biotech and pharmaceutical market. So from there, I ended up at Johnson & Johnson and immediately pivoted into the monoclonal antibody space. So these were, you know, very targeted molecules, very different from the small molecules that I was looking at before. And from there, what I was doing was taking a machine learning approach to traditionally non-machine learning problems within an organization that has a very traditional way of doing things. And because of that, I garnered a lot of attention. Some of it you could construe as maybe negative because I was trying to do something different and rock the boat a bit, which ultimately caught the eye of an organization within the company that was trying to find people who were doing exactly that. So I ended up in a group that was called the Center of Excellence for Advanced Technology, and our entire mandate was to utilize those sorts of methods or individual pieces of hardware and technology in order to identify and solve problems within the company. So it was very, very general, very broad, and that got me the opportunity to basically learn the entire business of drug development from early stage up through commercial and work on solutions pretty much all along that entire value chain. So, you know, that was really my time at Johnson & Johnson. And there's some additional details in there that you mentioned around what we were able to accomplish in that period of time. But since then, I ended up going to do my MBA at the University of Pennsylvania, met my now co-founder for BioFi, and started the company around 4 years ago at this point in time. So it's basically an extension of my learnings and much more specific applications into how you use artificial intelligence for drug development. So that was kind of my story arc, if you will.
Wow, there's a lot to cover in that. Impressive. Certainly, there's so many things that I've noted down that are of possible tangents when we're looking at exploring this conversation. So you've claimed that you're a scientist and engineer at heart, at the core. You also mentioned what, which is probably of great interest to the audience, like the ML approach that you took to non-ML problems per se. You also took us in a direction of the trail of experience that you've had in the antibody space, and you were talking about smaller molecules. Maybe we can start with the thread of the ML approach to non-ML problems. What did you mean by that specific fact?
Yeah, I can give you a very specific example. As soon as I started, one of the things that I was involved in was basically monitoring the outcomes of how you manufacture these antibodies. They're very complex molecules. So when they're ultimately created, you have to look at very specific quality attributes of the molecules, how they were manufactured and what their characteristics are. And the traditional way to do this is basically a single variable trending over time, and you're trying to see if there's any drift in the way that the manufacturing processes perform. But what I recognized, at least, you know, from my perspective, was that it was a very inefficient way to do it. One, because, you know, you had to flip through 8 million charts and you're using very standard univariate statistics. Whereas, you know, with the level of complexity that you have when you're talking about cell culture and antibodies is very, very high. So there are probably like latent dimensions or, you know, hidden relationships that you can't capture with univariate relationships. So I was basically taking that. And the absolute first thing that I did was a lot of dimensional reduction and trying to condense it down to, you know, principal components to trend along and see if there were any more robust ways to measure that process drift. So I was doing all these sorts of things, and it was just very far into the groups that I was working with, even though in the realm of machine learning and those sorts of things, it's actually quite simple. But, you know, starting somewhere was definitely the way to go. And that was one of my first learnings around how to get an organization to adopt new technology. It's definitely not jump to the most recent hot trend. If it's some organization or an individual that doesn't have a lot of understanding in the space, you have to take small steps. You have to start with more basic concepts and then over time work towards the more complex integrations.
So obviously, in bringing in an approach like that, you spoke of maybe you sort of indicated to maybe a little bit of resistance. And there's always resistance when you're looking into bringing new technologies into existing processes. And if it is an established process and if there is a certain sensitivity around it, then there is a little bit more resistance. When was it that you really started to see results, especially in the example that you've highlighted with the cell culture and antibodies, that made people realize that this is possibly a good approach to take?
So we certainly had success in doing that. And we actually started using it with one of our external partners at that point in time. They were a bit more forward thinking as an organization. So they were willing to, you know, adopt that and even started doing some of it over their own processes. But the real success that I saw within Johnson & Johnson came when I started looking at how to increase the yields of our processes. That was very challenging because, like you said, there's always an established process. And, you know, if it's working well, nobody wants to break it. So you have to have a really strong case, a really strong proof points, and a lot of conviction behind doing something like that to actually modify a process to increase the yields and be able to really change the way that supply chain works. So when we started working on that and we started showing tangible benefit, that was probably the largest inflection point that allowed us to make the case for scaling up and taking all the different components of technology that we had built and putting them across the organization internally as well as externally.
Did you use any other form of AI, or is it solely related to machine learning?
Sure. So just broadly, the major concepts that were useful in these particular areas were the dimensional reduction, like I mentioned. There was time series forecasting, and then blending that with just control theory that's necessary for process optimization. We also ended up looking at clustering and graph analysis effectively. That last piece was related to tracking raw materials through the supply chain and understanding how they were actually impacting the downstream process outcomes. And that was especially useful if there was any challenges when it came to, like I mentioned, the quality attributes and things like that once the batches were produced.
So maybe you can go into a little bit more detail about the challenges that you encountered in implementing the solutions at Johnson & Johnson in that specific respect and actually how you overcome them.
Of course. So I know that the organization has definitely made strides since, you know, I first started working on this. So they're in a much better place now, but their position was not unique. This is sort of the DNA of most of the large pharmaceutical companies, and it's a byproduct of when they started, how long they've been around, and how technology got implemented over time. What really we were working with was a lot of silo data that was spread across different functional areas, implemented in different ways, which ultimately made it very difficult to create any sort of, you know, harmonized solution that requires data from all of those different places. So much like any other machine learning problem, most of the work was in trying to figure out what data we needed, where it was, how to get it, and how to bring it together in a way that was consistent and repeatable. It's the part that nobody likes, but is actually the most critical piece to actually making programs like that work. So getting over that barrier and incrementally building up those capabilities was pretty foundational.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, there is a heavy emphasis on the quality of the data and making sure that you can access the data that you need. Do you see, just to sort of sidetrack, do you see generative AI and retrieval augmented generation helping in situations like this? I mean, it's a hot topic at the moment, retrieval augmented generation. Also with the generative capabilities, do you think that if that had been accessible in former years, that it would have helped address this particular problem?
I think that it would. You know, there's a lot of similarities in the architecture of transformers commonly used for generative AI and some of the graph theory that we were doing, especially as it relates to supply chain. So I think that that probably would have been solvable in a more reasonable amount of time. The other thing that I would say is, and you know, we recognize this with BioFi, and that's part of the reason that we have solutions in the generative space. A lot of the support functions for drug development are heavily language, documentation, and conversation-based. So for what the way that we think about it is regulatory quality and operations, by and large, it's a lot of documents that need to be maintained. It's a lot of being able to write down what changes were in batch records, if there were issues that needed to be addressed, how did you change them? And because of that, it's, you know, a really big opportunity to be able to address those challenges. So yes, had this been available back then, we would have jumped at the opportunity. And that's part of the reason we decided to tackle it with BioFi.
Yeah, so let's move on to that. So let's move on to BioFi. So this is your life sciences health tech company. Maybe we can start with how AI will... Really, how is AI applied in drug development, specifically maybe in addressing biases in clinical trials?
So I'll give you the high level and then we can focus in on where that piece fits into this particular component. So we're interested in the drug development space. And we say that specifically because we like to differentiate from discovery. You know, there's a lot of capital and resources going into improving the discovery process with artificial intelligence, you know, creating novel molecules from scratch. But to date, there's been limited success in actually doing so. And we think that there's a lot more immediate value that can be created by focusing on the development space, which we classify as once the molecule has been identified and there's a commitment to work on it, what exactly do you do? So the way that BioFi thinks about drug development and artificial intelligence applications is in two pieces. One we call identify and one accelerate. So for identify, we're really trying to solve the problem of you have an opportunity set in front of you. It's either your internal portfolio or external drugs, you know, that if you're a large pharmaceutical company, you could bring in-house to work on. How do you choose which programs to work on? And if you are going to work on them, how do you allocate resources? That by and large is a question of how viable do you think the program is and what's the ultimate outcome you can expect to be a commercial or impact to patients. So we wanted to create a quantitative system to be able to do that. This was very motivated by my time at J&J, as well as my co-founder's experience in portfolio management in the financial realm and wanting to have more quantitative metrics to figure out how to do so, but really lacking that because in life sciences, the value inflection points are all driven by whether or not the science works. Yeah. You don't have cash flows. You don't have those sorts of things to solve the problem. So we wanted to create a system that would do exactly that. Like I mentioned before, the accelerate side of things is that generative AI for regulatory quality and operations. And that's really geared towards once you know what you're going to work on and you've allocated resources to those programs, how do you support the functions that are critical to getting those drugs to regulatory approval? So we do exactly that with the regulatory operations and quality side of things.
So what is it that you exactly do there with the accelerate component and the generative AI for regulatory operations?
So on that side of things, we work in a tiered manner. So like many initial sort of products in the space, there's a co-pilot component to it. And we did this in a design partnership with a large pharmaceutical company to really understand where the pain points were, where the most time-consuming tasks were. And we basically designed it to address those in particular. But we really believe that the most interesting use cases are outside of the co-pilot space. You know, we think that's really low-hanging fruit. It's a way for us to start working with people early, but the more interesting things here are more niche applications of the technology. A good way to think about it is, exactly. So if you had a system that had a full understanding of regulatory policy and decision making, what could you do with that? The answer is a lot. And there's a lot of specific things that you can do to create value for those organizations. Like, you know, imagine being in compliance 100% of the time, regardless of whether the regulatory environment is changing. You know, you could do that because this model could actually sit in the background and constantly monitor those changes and flag internal changes that would need to be made in order to stay in compliance without intervention from anyone internally. Just as an example, but there's many use cases like that that are very specific that have come to, you know, our attention and working with our partners, and those are the ones we're focused on.
Sounds interesting. It's something that I've come across quite recently myself, and I am very much in the same frame of mind when it comes to the application or the implementation of a co-pilot using generative AI technologies. Maybe we can go back then. So in addressing the biases, how are you taking on that challenge?
Yes. So in clinical trials specifically, which is a major component of what we do with Identify for clinical stage companies, the underlying patient population is always a major consideration. So historically, if you really go and look at the data, clinical trials have, by and large, had a very large proportion of participation from Caucasian males, you know, just because of access, because of the information being readily available and actually being able to get to those opportunities. That created a lot of challenges over time, because if you get a drug approved on the basis of a very narrow population, but when it's actually being prescribed in the real world, you're actually giving it to people outside of that population, there's no guarantee that the reactions and efficacy are going to be the same. In fact, it's been observed quite a few times at this point that the genetic makeup of people of different nationalities and genders respond differently to the drugs. And that really makes it important to try to have a patient population within clinical trials that is representative of who is actually going to receive it in the end. And the ideal state being that you can cover a diverse enough patient population within the trial that you don't have to worry about, you know, prescribing outside of the validated population is a good way to think about it. So from an artificial intelligence perspective, you can really think about helping solve that problem by focusing on, when you're designing the clinical trials and you're trying to think about, how do I get not only the right patients into the trial, but ensure that I get enough of them in the time period that I need to make the trial successful, you have a pretty serious optimization problem on your hand. It's easy to say, or easier to say, how do I maximize the probability of success of this trial? It's harder to do that simultaneously while trying to pick the right sites and investigators in order to run the trial and ensuring that they have access to the right patient population. Yeah, so solving all of that together is the real challenge.
So is it possible to solve all of that as well? Do you see it? Maybe it's a side tangent as well here in the integration opportunities, but do you see AI per se as also being a tool that can assist that challenge that you've highlighted?
Of course. And I think, you know, like I said, I think about these problems in a very engineering sort of way. And to me, that's a problem that is very ripe for optimization. You know, there are objective functions with multiple objectives that you can try to solve for simultaneously. You know, you really need to have a good amount of computational power to do so. But we've been able to see that you can actually do that by, you know, picking the right locations and the right people to be involved in the trial and getting the right patients.
It is fascinating, the whole exploration of ethics within the field of healthcare, because it's like a sort of multifaceted brush that touches upon numerous impactful elements, especially in the range of demographics that are associated with different drugs and clinical trials and the drugs that are being developed. There's some people, though, and I can imagine a lot of people that are listening to this conversation that might not be 100% aware of how many ethical considerations have to be made in the application and use of AI, especially in the healthcare value chain.
It is significant. You know, I would say nearly every decision that's made probably touches some form of ethics, not only in, you know, the biotech and pharmaceutical industry itself, but in the application as well. When it comes to ethics and artificial intelligence, one of the things that I think is really important is asking the right questions. Oftentimes, the focus from a business perspective is, how do we get the outcomes that we want And, you know, given the responsibility of companies to their shareholders, it's oftentimes around, you know, maximizing profits and different financial metrics. So because of that, it's easy to say, you know, this is our objective, let's drive as hard at this as we can. And it actually takes a lot of courage to ask the question, yes, but how are we actually training these models in order to achieve that outcome? Being the person to stand up and ask that question can be very challenging, because a lot of people are concerned that if they rock the boat, if they make that query and rub somebody the wrong way or derail the outcome, that they'll be held responsible for it. So it really takes somebody with the understanding of what the issues could be, but two, the courage to do that in order to actually make those changes.
And I think that one word that you've mentioned is obviously the understanding of the concept of being able to understand the situation and then have the courage or the desire to raise the question that could be asked around how are we training these particular models. Is there an active encouragement in the field? What is the status of the field when you look at the application, especially in healthcare, in biophysics, when it comes to like questioning the use of artificial intelligence in the field?
By and large, what I've seen is that there's a push towards, and the people that are most effective at being able to address those challenges are the multidisciplinary experts. A lot of the gaps come when the people making decisions around whether or not to go forward with a particular approach don't have a full understanding of what they're actually doing or what the process is, and they're just interested in the outcomes. The only way to get at that problem is to have people who not only understand the technology, but are versed in what the business needs and really wrap that into a single person, because then they're well positioned to be able to do both of those. But if you have, you know, somebody who only understands one side of the problem, it creates an environment where it's very difficult to address those challenges. So I think that is probably one of the most key components.
Would you say that? I mean, I imagine that there's also a lot of aspirational individuals in the audience that might need some advice when they're looking to entering the biotech industry. Do you think that this is good advice in terms of the skill set that might be beneficial in their career?
I do. I think that it's really important to be well-versed in the technical side of things. But I think by and large, the real value going forward, unless you're going to be, you know, the top 0.0001% in your field in artificial intelligence, is to be a multidisciplinary expert. The reason being that if you can wrap the expertise of the technical side as well as the problems you're trying to solve in an individual person, you don't really face the challenge of translation in goals and the way to actually accomplish the problem that you would if you were doing it between two people or multiple people on a team. I've seen that be significantly more effective because the problem can be solved and addressed within a single person's head rather than having to go through the process and get things lost in translation. So my recommendation would be try to make sure that you're exposed broadly, not only to your deep technical area, but also get a really good understanding of the processes that you're trying to be involved in and the business that you're actually working with on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Seems like good advice. What are you excited about for the future? Obviously, you must have a lot of ambitions around what you are developing at BioFi. What do you maybe see as the next big trends in the intersection of AI and biotechnology? Or maybe what you hope for?
Yeah, I can tell you what I hope for. And I think that there's going to be trends that drive towards it. So the way that we think about it is capital efficiency. So one of the theses that BioFi was founded on is that artificial intelligence can make a significant impact in the way that capital and resources are allocated to different drug development programs. Our hope is that once we're able to get our approaches and our metrics into the hands of the life sciences industry as a whole, from small biotechs up to the largest of pharmas, if people are relying on a more accurate way to decide on which programs to pursue and which should be, you know, shelved or abandoned, it will cost a lot less to bring an individual drug to market, because the costs that you often see quoted of a few billion dollars to bring a drug to market often incorporates all the failed programs that were required to actually get that one all the way across the line. So if you imagine a scenario where you have significantly less failures. Those resources were instead rooted towards the programs that ended up being successful. You have a situation where the right drugs got to the market and patients faster, and you have far less waste in the system. And if you extrapolate that over the entire industry, the model changes, frankly, and you have a much more efficient way of getting medicine to patients in a more rapid manner, and brings the cost down for everyone, the company's benefit, the investors' benefit, and the patient's benefit. So I think that that's really what we're excited about. There are a lot of ways to accomplish that goal, and we're trying to tackle a few of them, but all of these auxiliary use cases for artificial intelligence in the space as well will contribute to it. So that's really what we're hoping for.
Capital efficiency. Have you imagined, it sounds all very logical. Doable is another question. But the logic behind it and the components that you've conveyed there, it's associatable. Do you have a time frame on it, though? How long do you think it would take for that to actually happen? Getting the right drugs to market faster, the whole movement around enhancing capital efficiency, how long do you think that'll take?
So I'm under no illusion that life sciences and drug development is not a fast moving market when it comes to changes. Healthcare in general is not. As much as I'd like to say this is going to happen in the next 2-3 years, I don't think that's realistic. We think that BioFi is going to make a significant impact within the next 5 to 10 years. I don't think that it will be fully realized and solved within that time frame, but we'd like to be able to see measurements that would actually show a significant improvement over that time frame. That being said, the capability of artificial intelligence is accelerating at a very, very rapid rate. And, there's probably things that will be available in the next 6 to 18 months, which will significantly change that trajectory. And if we keep accelerating in this direction, those 5 to 10 years could quickly become something that's a lot shorter in the time frame. So we'll have to see how a few of those things play out, but that acceleration could make it happen a lot faster.
Yeah, let's see. So I'll keep my eye on the market and see what happens in the next 16 to 18 months. It's been fascinating talking with you today, Dave, and I thank you for your insights and also your experience. And I can see a dedicated passion as well to what you're motioning yourselves in the life sciences and biotechnology sector, especially with BioFi. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
And I'd like to thank everyone else who's participated in this conversation with us today. If you enjoyed the conversation, then share it. Thank you.